It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Unafeared, 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 here and declare your independence of me, Ernest Hancock, yeah. Oh, yeah, when I got my voice on, it's a lot different from everybody else that's in. Oh! We're not afraid. Even the power just went out. Right at the top, it just, Donna goes, the power just went out. But we anticipate such shenanigans. So we got backup batteries, give us like a half hour or something. So Donna's, you know, out tripping, break, doom. But the power. So we'll go as long as we can. The man tried to stop us talking to James Corbett, thecorbettreport.com. This is Ernest Hancock on Declare Your Independence of Me. Ernest Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAU Tiefel Studios of Phoenix.com. All right, James. This is what I want to talk to you about. Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff. There's stuff. But I saw you did. You kind of sneaked out. You're doing another report. You're bringing up, you know, something, and it got you all scared. And you go, man, I got to tell the peoples this. There's a, something, a robot, a thing, because something scared the crap out of you. Come on, share.
I think I mentioned something along these lines last time. I mentioned I was reading Surveillance Valley by Yasha Levine about Silicon Valley and how it's, from the beginning, it was set up by the military and intelligence.
Yeah.
So I'm doing research along those lines. And for people who haven't seen the video, I was looking at the Stanford Research Institute and specifically their Artificial Intelligence Center, which they formed, I think it was set up in the 1960s. So we tend to believe that artificial intelligence and all of this is some cutting edge technology that we're just developing now. No, they've been working on it for half a century now with Pentagon money, obviously. ARPA was a huge contractor with the Stanford Research Institute. And I was just on that video yesterday that you're referring to, I was just looking at a video of Shaky the Robot that they were working on 50 years ago. It was 1966, I think, they came out with a promotional film showing Shaky the Robot, which is this, I mean, it's not much of a robot, but it moves around the room and you can tell it to
and
go.
I saw it was a square box and it had whiskers and it did. And I grew up with this stuff in the 60s and 70s. There was a program called 2020 and it's kind of a PBS Nova thing, came out later and on. Yep. And I remember when they were doing the first heart transplants, when they were doing between, you know, sheep and goats and all this kind of stuff. And they get us all prepped for the future. Woohoo! It's Star Trek. It must be true. I saw it on Star Trek. Well, they get you prepared for this. So by the time I'm wanting the Jetsons, it's time now. I'm going, what up? Where the hell is it? It's in 50, 60, what? And I get a space shuttle in the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2010. I'm going, seriously, this is innovation on government. But they wanted to prep you for something. They were doing something.
Yeah, but keep in mind, I mean, that's the innovation they want you to see.
Right.
But I mean, yeah, we're expected to believe that the best thing that the U.S. Air Force has come up with in the last 50 years was the SR-71. Like, don't worry, guys. They haven't developed anything else, you know, under the radar technology since then. That's the cutting edge, the 50-year-old technology.
You know, it was 1982, I think. It was early 80s that Popular Mechanics had the article about the SR-71 Blackbird. And I read that over and over and over, and I'm going, holy crap, they were making this when I was born. And I'm going, what the hell we got now?
Exactly.
Nothing.
And now, it's 40 years from that point, and they're still saying SR-71 is the, you know, the record holder for this and that. It's ridiculous. It's nonsense. I mean, we do know, we get little glimpses of things from time to time. We know that there's that space plane that they've launched, the was in orbit for 2 years or something, and they couldn't tell.
Yeah, the space plane, little mini shuttle,
whatever it was. Yeah, and it's like it's on some mission, and it'll be back in 2 years. Don't worry. It's like, oh, okay, you know, and we have no idea what's going on under the cover of national secrecy and all that nonsense. But well, I guarantee you, it's light years ahead of what they're showing.
It's so much that we have no idea. I remember I was just before I came in here, I started rewatching First Contact, a Gene Roddenberry thing. It was after Star Trek. You know, they did this, they're companions. They're here to, and I remember in that series, I'm watching it through. They only had like a season or two of it. And you get to the end where you find out these guys have been watching us all this time from the dark side of the moon. And how the hell we know? Because you don't see the other side of the moon. So I'm going, well, sooner or later, I mean, we're going to have a little satellite, a little go landing, maybe. You know, then what? And we're going to find out, we're going to live in lava tubes and find out it's hollow and knocking on the moon is titanium shell. Don't laugh, man. You hear all these conspiracies and so on. When they did a sonar the impact on the moon, they go, rings like a bell. I think it might be hollow, man. You know, nothing surprises me anymore.
I don't know where it comes from. I got to track that down.
You know, I did one time. I looked, and it was one of the probes that they sent to do exactly that. They put up seismic, what do you call them? You know, seismometers or whatever on the moon, and then hit it with a probe, and then they just wanted to kind of get what the end tide was and see if there's, I don't know, oil or something. I have no idea. So they do that, and they go, and it was wom wom wom, and they're going, you know, this seems kind of hollow. The mass is wrong, yada, 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 yada. And then it just kind of gets off, and it needs a Corbett report.
Well, yeah. No, this is the kind of stuff I don't get into because, but actually, it's a crazy book, but Who Built the Moon?
Yeah.
You know, and there's some genuinely crazy things about the
moon. Did you read it?
The book? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, if it's on your shelf, James read it.
It brings up a lot of really interesting points, and then it goes into some... The last bit is just speculation about, well, then clearly the moon must have been built by time-traveling humans in the future and sent back to our time as a message. And it's like, what? Wait, where did that come from? But there is, like, genuine stuff in here about, you know, the moon being at the exact right distance and the exact right size to exactly 100% cover the sun in a solar eclipse and everything. And it's like, the odds of this are infinitesimal.
That's all part of the Matrix, man. We're in a simulation. You know, that's one thing that Musk said that just really resonated. He goes, you know, if at any advancement at all, any progression in a technology, sooner or later, it would become indistinguishable from reality. They're talking about virtual reality. And I'm going, yeah, that'd be a coming. It's getting, I remember when I go to the Consumer Electronics Show and they want to show you the 3D whatever for the press. And I'm going, yeah, the resolution's not that good. I get where you're going. It's kind of 3D and it's cool and, you know, practicing my trail biking or something, yeah, but you know, now it's getting whoa. And like James is saying, if we're getting whoa, that means a couple decades ago they had whoa. And you see the movie with Christopher Walken and Natalie Wood. It's called Brainstorm. Have you ever seen this?
Nope.
No, put it on your list. That's a James Corbett movie. Brainstorm. And it was about how they were recording and interfacing between people with brainwaves and all this kind of stuff. And what made the movie interesting is one of the lead doctors had a heart attack and she died, and she put it on and recorded her death. You know, so that got, I will say no more. I think you should watch it.
Yeah.
But that was in the 80s. You know, that's Christopher Walken young. I mean, heck, that's a good enough reason to watch it right there. But it was a very impactful on a young mind like mine, seeing where we're going when, like James is saying, where we already are. So when we say we, I mean, it's not, DARPA's not a we thing. They took the we money, but they're doing whatever. So what got you prompted to give this kind of warning or observation? It seemed like you were like, I'm getting this out, man, before somebody does something.
It's just one of those things, like, and there's no point in the last decade of my research of this that you could have said that to me, that the technology of the deep state is decades ahead of where commercial technology is. There's no point at which I would have disagreed with that. I would have just nodded my head, yeah. But there are moments where you're doing research and it just strikes you in the face and you're like, oh, yeah, there it is. Like, yeah, there's that abstract idea that I kind of know, but there it is in your face. And that just kind of hit me with that. But it's more of the research that I'm doing generally here with Surveillance Valley, Silicon Valley, is it's really, really driving the point home that people just do not have the imagination or the historical understanding to truly grasp how utterly constructed our reality is by the intelligence agencies and the military, who have been working on this stuff before it was even conceivable to the public. I mean, when you look back at the early databases that were constructed by the Pentagon for counterinsurgency operations in the Vietnam War on punch card machines, when most people had no concept of computing or what it was or how it worked, they were already constructing detailed databases that they could sort seven ways from Sunday to try to predict movements and behaviors in Vietnam so that they could better handle counterinsurgency and all of this. You know, I mean, they were there from the beginning, from before the beginning.
Okay. There's some other, see, I'm a movie guy when it comes to this kind of stuff. So there was one called Looker, and it starred Roy Schreiner, whatever his name is, the guy that played the sheriff in Jaws. Okay. You know, and in 2010 Space Odyssey, whatever that guy. So he, as a detective, he's trying to find killers of these women that were all models, blah, blah, blah. And what they did is they would get them all, you know, computer generated and then kill them so they make all the money on their avatar of them doing commercials. Okay. So this is, he starts to find out what's going on. And it was, and in there, they were like, where do your eyes go in ads? Cleavage, legs, butt, cleavage, legs, car. I mean, you know, that kind of thing. So they're going, you know, you'd look at this stuff, they're studying it. It was just laid out right in front of you in the 80s going, this is what we're going to do to you. This is how we're going to do it. And now you got deep fake videos. And what he did, he came up, there's Zuckerberg up there going, yeah, man, I rule the world and billions of people, your data, and get over it. You know, all they need is one 15-second, I've seen it happen. All right, James, I'll give you an example. I want to get this in here. Everybody look at this picture. This is Popular Mechanics article. This is the one I was talking about, and I can't see the month on there. But this, oh, it's July 91. It has to be 81. Right, anyway, so this is Popular Mechanics, world's fastest plane. I remember that came out. Does that say 91? I thought it was earlier. So I'm going, this is just, you know, inspired me. But the example I wanted to give was, God damn, now I lost it. James, help me out, man. Be interesting. Fill my time. There's no dead air on my show. But I wanted to show people this picture. But I wanted to say, what was, oh, yeah, we did the Looker, that they did that, and they had now computer-generated actors that they're doing stuff with. And they get you, but it just takes, well, yeah, this is a story I wanted to say. It takes one time, like you were saying, you'll get a celebrity at just the right time to get the right vote on the right guy, gets and rules the world kind of thing. And it's one of those, we play a game of inches, you know, and they get that inch. You need one person at the right time, right before some big event, to say this about that, and all of a sudden, Project Bluebeam, where you're hearing things or seeing things, to get the people to do something at just the right time. And then after that, it's too late. Doesn't matter. Missiles launched. I mean, you know, doesn't make any difference. So then 9/11 stuff happens, and they go, hey, I got this call, and it was real time, and somebody, and it kind of, it didn't really seem like him, it wouldn't, but this is what you're talking about, the technology.
Hi, Mom, it's your son, Mark Bingham.
And I'm spiraling in, feed the cat. I mean, you know, but yeah, no, this is what I'm talking about, and what you were talking about, and why when you came out with this, I'm going, James came across something. What are you working on, man, this surveillance state deal? Tell us about it a little bit.
It's just look. I mean, if you want kind of the moments of realization I'm having, go and read Surveillance Valley by Yasha Levine, and it's got a lot of detail in there. Unfortunately, he is a leftist, collectivist, statist government hugger who believes that what we need to do is, you know, take back the internet. The problem is it was privatized, and you know, blah blah blah. Whatever. You know, filter
okay. And it's
that
called
garbage.
What? Surveillance Valley. Surveillance what?
Surveillance Valley.
Surveillance Valley. Okay.
But there's a lot of good detail in there, and it's just he makes a good point that there in the night it's crazy. In, if you go back to the 1960s and 70s when this was first being reported on and first entering the public consciousness, hey, Pentagon is creating these databases, and they had all this illegally stored information, and they were supposed to destroy it, and instead they sent it off to the NSA and the CIA and fed it into their systems, and you know, people were freaking out about this and saying this is the end, because they understood these databases they're constructing are This is the weaponization of information. This is exactly a nightmare scenario. And then something happened. And by the time you get to the 90s and the sort of the internet boom, suddenly it was the internet is freedom and it's going to free us all. And we now democratization of information and blah, blah, blah. And you get all this utopian stuff. And now 20 years on from that, now we're back to, oh yeah, it's all surveillance and everything. But it's interesting that that flip that happened. And I have been one of the biggest proponents of the last decade of this is the new Gutenberg revolution and we have to use this technology while we can and spread the word and everything. But it's making me even me question, you know, I mean, clearly this has been controlled since the beginning and it was allowed to us. Are they going to, they're clearly not going to continue to allow it on the, you know, the main platforms, but to what extent can we even get around it? I mean,
you know, what they've done is, because I witnessed it as it started to come up. Early on, when you started getting the first emails, you didn't go a week without at least two mailings from AOL with a CD, you know? And what did the government charge itself or something? They had free mailings. I mean, you know, whatever they were doing. And a friend of mine, one of Donna's first clients, you know, just bought a big, you know, multi-gazillion dollar property back in the day and moved from Massachusetts and Denton. What he did with it, how he did it, was AOL money because he was an MIT grad and he was helping them doing some consulting, installing of this is what you need and servers of whatever. And he goes, yeah, these guys got unlimited money and they know what they're doing. So I'm like, going to bet on them. Well, he did and sold them at like 80-something, and they took a dump, so he came out okay. But he could see what was happening. And AOL, whoever was funding them from before and what, they knew exactly what they wanted to do. They wanted to get in your head. That's what they wanted to do. And I could tell in the activism in the mid-90s, all your favorite books, your favorite quotes, your favorite color, your favorite movies, you know, what triggers you, your songs, and stuff you would never tell your parents. And my kids put it on. I had a board op one time. He goes, hey, man, your daughter looking pretty hot there in Mexico with her friends. I'm like, Mexico with what? And she was only like 18, 19 years old. So I'm going to, I had to go on Facebook to see what she was doing. And I'm going, really? You know, so my board op is telling me more. So This is, of course, they needed this. But now what? What's the now what? They're going to flip the switch and we all get plugged into like, iRobot and Will Smith, and they're all Lucy's telling everybody what to do now, which is kind of what they're doing. You know, what are you afraid of?
Yeah, well, that's kind of why I ended up that video on deepfakes, is because that's kind of the technology that I don't know where it goes from there, because once that really filters down to the public consciousness, that literally everything you see or hear could be manipulated and could be fake. That's it. That's the final, uncorking of the bottle, because at that point, everything is suspect. You can't trust anything except what you are physically seeing with your own eyes, and even then.
Hell yeah! I mean, you know, give you a flashy light scenario shot of Elusa, whatever the hell. Hell, we're in a matrix
whatever
now.
Kind of cloaking technology and whatever else the Pentagon has in real life. Anyway, but you know what I mean. I mean, if you're not physically there seeing something or experiencing it, how are you? How the hell are you going to know? So, that's dangerous. I mean, yes, we should question everything is the old phrase, right? But when you get to the point where you literally have to question everything because you cannot trust anything, there is no bond to create society of any sort at that point. And that's kind of the final uncorking of the bottle. That's Civil War 2.0 and whatever else comes from that, where it's just total echo chambers of you can't trust anything that the other side says because whatever they say is a fake. And when we reach that point, I don't know, it's game over. How are we going to form society at that point?
You know, there's another level I want to make sure I'm thinking of it, people understand. There was a video editing, or at least photo editing, to where you have any picture and you could insert, they do that now, you insert different stuff. But the thing that kind of freaked me out is you could take a light source, a lamp, a sun, a spotlight, a this, a that, and you move it around the room and it changes all the shadows. Yeah. And I'm going,
actually,
it's
much more beyond that now, because they now
that was, yeah, that was single, 5 years ago.
You're right. Exactly. They can now take a single picture of someone from any angle.
More
and
least.
They can 3D manipulate it. And so it looks like a moving, like a video, like, and you can make the mouth move and everything from one single image of something. Like they've done it with the Mona Lisa and stuff. And yeah, you can kind of tell it's not quite right, but you know,
yeah, they get
that
2, 4, 8. By the time they get 32, it's kind of an exponential thing, I guess. They get 32 pictures, And man, you're walking in, you know, it's your grandma, you know? So
they have hundreds of hours of HD of my face. So.
Oh no, you're screwed, man. You're screwed. Yeah. We're all screwed. We're screwed. Except they're going to always have to have headphones on me for the rest of my life. But you know, this, but this is where we're going. I'm to what end? You know, so I'm looking, you know, to James for that. You're going, God, it seems like, okay, how they conquered the world, why they conquered the world. Is it all part of the same thing?
Yes, but, you know, at a certain point, it comes to the question of what is the end game of something like that? Because once you want, if we get to that point where it's total pandemonium and no one trusts anything whatsoever, what kind of order can you impose on that? Or is it just then that's the time to start the depopulation and, you know, that end game? I don't know. Like, I don't know what the real end goal is, other than the transhumanist, you know, let's upload our consciousness to a computer. But I think that's the kind of stuff that's sold to the sort of the middle rung of the gopher elite, not the upper elite. I don't think the upper elite really believe they're going to upload their soul to computers and live forever kind of thing. Maybe they do. I don't know. Is that, do you think that's their end game?
There was a book by, how was it, Hogan, John Hogan, I think it is. James Hogan. James Hogan, and it starts off, they call it the Giant Series, and it was three books that were written about, yeah, we're visited, and it was they find a spacesuit, a guy sitting there looking at the Earth on the surface of the moon. Where the hell did he come from? You know, that kind of thing. So they follow it back and forth, and throughout this series, you find that on the methane world of Titan, there was life in the form of machines. And what had happened, it was a civilization that sends out these robots to get resources and send it back to homeworld kind of thing. And the homeworld, they're jerking around with their son, they went Nova, and they die. So what a lot of people, with this was coming, all these sophisticated androids and machines that they did, they uploaded their minds and souls to be in them, but when they crashed, they broke that link and they didn't go into these robots. That then became self-aware, had their own culture, they're existing, humans come there, interact, blah, blah, blah. Later, in book two or three, you find out that this civilization had a bunch of minds in there ready to be uploaded. And when they did, hilarity ensued. I mean, you know, that kind of thing. Because people bring their problems with them, you know? And it was amazing how detailed the motivation for doing it, how they would do it, what they would do when they did it, and the timelessness of doing it, you know, when you're, once you're bottled up. So the imagination, yes, I've been thinking about it and people have written about this and so on. Why would you think other people would do it? Vanity? Fear? They're going to do it. Somebody's going to do it. Somebody's got the money. Somebody's going to convince them to do it. And here it comes. Would you pass a law saying they can't?
No. Yeah, no, of course not. But I think of people like Ray Kurzweil. If you want to see the psychology of someone who would be attracted to this, someone like Ray Kurzweil, who's obsessed with staying alive. Like, he's so afraid to die, and he had some kind of father issue kind of thing going on, and he's been pimping transhumanism for a long time, obviously, and the singularity and all that, but also there's that transgenderism lumped in with that, because I remember a video of his where it's like, we're all going to live as avatars, and you could be a man or a woman or something in between or whatever you want. I don't know. That's the kind of psychology that I think the middle gopher elite are attracted to, this idea. But the upper crust, I don't know. I just don't think, and this seems like something is dangled in front. But the problem is that we're sitting here at the sort of lower cultural level or whatever of information that trickles down. And so there's so much programming, cultural programming that gets put on top of this by the science fiction writers and others. And so we have so many different templates that we can draw from. Is it going to be a 2001 type of idea where you know, it's like we're extending our consciousness. First, we'll have to venture into space and then we'll find the portal and, you know, metaphorically or literally, and we'll reach the next star child level of humanity? Or is it that kind of, you know, we're destined to upload our souls to computers and exterminate ourselves that way? Or is it the Saturn moon matrix thing that people are talking about now, that reality is broadcast from the hexagon in Saturn and it's broadcast through the moon to our
that is freaky though. I like a hexagon thing. That's freaky. You know, I mean
there's so many different things, and or there's like the Prometheus, we were seeded by an alien race kind of thing and all this.
You know, I mean, my thing has always been when they had the Phoenix Lights here, I got a lot of contact from a lot of libertarians in the late 90s when we had just, or 2000 around in there, we had just opened our restaurant. I'm head down plow, man. I ain't got time to be jerking around with that. But a lot of people, that is thousands of people. This was like a thing here. And I'm going, yeah, they're Klingons or they're Vulcans. It's like, you know, live free and prosper, or, you know, freaking we rule you too. And I'm like, get in line with the other guys that say the same thing. So it's just, to me, if by their fruits, I don't really worry about it, except there may be a totally different value structure. We're an interdimensional of, you're just a life force that we suck off and graze like cattle on the life force of grass of humans or some crap. You know, I need to know. And I don't think that those that know are telling. They're not sharing. But there's a big giant increase in all this UFO disclosure stuff coming up. I'm feeling something's going to get announced. We got to be afraid, and United Nations have come together for the collective of why we need them for something. I mean, you feel it?
Of course. And it's been talked about for a long time. You know, Ronald Reagan musing about, wouldn't it be great if there was some alien threat that brought us together as humanity? And Bill Clinton talking about the same thing. Wernher von Braun was talking about this. It was going to be an asteroid threat, and then they were going to use the alien threat. And he was talking about basically different false flags that would they could cycle through to make sure that they could unite humanity under one flag. I mean, it's been talked about for a long time.
You know, the fifth letter of Captain Mark, you go to piratewithoutborders.com, and the fifth letter addresses artificial intelligence, and we call it the fifth letter of Captain, the first contact protocol. And the reason is that at some point, you're going to come up against some AI or Ant going, yeah, no. I'm Caesar, you know, the ape, and I just say no. You know, now what? And it's going to be very telling in the type of how you program artificial intelligence. If you put in biases and you put in collectivization and pattern behavior of all, and all humans got to freaking die, man. That's just the way they won't judge you as individuals, because our governments don't. These project leaders don't. If you judge people by individual, their individual behavior, that will transcend through any of our inventions, or at least the best chance that it might, you know, and we'll be better off. But I'm worried, well, man.
Yeah, but isn't the scariest part about this? Every single time they try to release some sort of, you know, learning algorithm, you know, AI type thing on Twitter, on the internet generally, it almost instantly becomes
racist.
A Nazi, you know, kill all the Jews kind of, like, instantly becomes radicalized. And obviously because 4chan and other places are playing with it. But, I mean, that does speak to something about the way this technology is going to develop. I mean, it's going to be the reflection of the worst of humanity.
Right. I'm concerned. But not because I'm worried about technology. It's the guys wielding it and how they use it.
Yeah. But you can't separate it. That's the problem.
I just don't want to be denied.
And the function and the way that it's coming, it's not going to arise spontaneously. It's going to arise from our biases and our motivations, and it's going, and not our. Not you, not me. Yeah. It's the billionaires.
No, it's going to go towards freaking killing, making that biological thing not breathing it out anymore. That's what's going to happen. Yep. It was called Mars something. What was it? I think it had Brad Pitt in it or some name or whatever. Doesn't matter. And it had this robot that crash lands, and it was for the Marines. It was like a robot. And then when it crashed, it kind of messed up some circuitry, and I'm on combat mode. I'm going to go kick your ass. So it just preyed on these astronauts as they're trying to escape. Well, that's what I see is happening. They're going to program these things to be killers. They want to know your circulatory system or your arteries. Well, how are you going to sever this? The most efficient use of you're not breathing anymore. And then, you know, they're going to come with some software. It's going to say, you know, to serve man. And they're going to think, okay, we're a cookbook. I mean, you know, so they're going to go cook you. So it's just, you know, you can't be too careful on this stuff. So you have to go the way you always have to get any kind of good out of this, is be good. You know, judge individuals, you know, by their individual actions and so on. Instead, there's a human, kill them. You know, there's a human with a gun, you know, ready to, you know, slit the throat of a 4-year-old, whatever the hell. I mean, you got to come up with some criteria.
You know, the baseline for this has to be, it has to be a respect for life.
There you go.
If you do not respect life, then there's no, there's the, there will be nothing to build upon. And the worst part is that respect for life itself is being engineered out of us, out of society. And it's getting harder and harder.
Now talk about that. Engineered out of us. It's desensitization TV of doing kind of lump of whatever the hell. And they're just desensitizing of what for what?
There is a nihilistic tendency that I think is being engineered. It's certainly being promoted in the media more and more, to the point where the sort of the secular humanist worldview that is kind of the standard for Western liberal democracies and whatever, the enlightened, post-enlightenment, this is the era we live in, is more and more based on this idea. It's very materialist. It's only matter. We're only clumps of cells kind of thing. And it's converging on the idea that we're biological robots with no free will. It's the whole Sam Harris kind of thing. And that, you know, that's the end point of this rational secular humanist viewpoint. And of course, what is the, I mean, is there any inherent intrinsic value to life in that? No, it's just a clump of cells. It's just, you know, we're just random star stuff that came here and developed somehow or other. And now we're doing all of this and it doesn't matter on, you know, in any sort of moral sphere, because there is no such thing as a moral sphere. There's only the material universe. And that pervading idea, which is very popular amongst a large subsection of the population at this point, is fundamentally life denying. It is, there's no basis or reason for cherishing life in that scenario. And that is what is, I think, most likely to be programmed in by the programmers who are very much part of this indoctrination that's going on. So I don't know. I mean,
there was a friend of mine, he, in one of his college papers for his master's something. And, the point that he was making is that matter evolves and matter becomes life, and matter, you know, wants to just keep on keeping on down to the subatomic particle. He goes, what's the point of life? To keep on keeping on, and to replicate, to keep on keeping on. He tried to make that argument down throughout every particle of matter that it's biggest function is just to keep being, you know, and then it'll balance out with something else. There'll be an equilibrium of, and there'll be a reaction of whatever, but it still wants to maintain itself until you get into quantum, and then it doesn't want to do anything. It gets all weird. But, you know, the I always thought that was a neat default position, is that life just wants to keep on keeping on. Well, however it does that, and all the other stuff that goes along with that, and then you got errors and what. So I'm thinking that intelligent life, or maybe even artificial intelligence, if they want to keep on keeping on, do you think that they would learn from all their study and intelligence and history that the best way to keep on keeping on is not be a dick? I was just wondering, you know, because if you start being destructive, you start, you know, getting other people's way, you stop them keeping on, all of a sudden you become a target and you don't keep on as long.
Yeah. Let's put it this way. Let's just take the singularity kind of propaganda at face value and say that the whatever intelligence develops is going to be this super intelligence that will be more than the sum of the parts of all of human knowledge. It will be able to completely survey that.
As Google's reading all the books.
Yeah, from everything that's ever written, everything that's ever been said, every experience that's ever happened that's been recorded digitally will all be sucked in, and it will have the combined knowledge of humanity itself and thus be able to supersede even humanity's collective knowledge, let alone how much more smart it will be than any individual person. So it will be this super, super, super intelligence. So fundamentally, it comes down to the point, do you really believe that collective security comes from cooperation? Or do you believe that it is just to fight for your individual existence and screw everyone and everything else? Which one do you believe is truly the better option? Because if this is this super intelligent being, it will discover, you know, which one is the actual better strategy, and it will implement it. And I have to believe cooperation is the better strategy.
Well, when they implement whatever it is that they believe their mission statement is or something, is there going to be the robotic three laws of? I mean, you're not. See, that was the thing in iRobot, the modern version with Will Smith, is Vicky, the central computer, had decided that, you know, first law of robotics, don't harm humans. You can't kill or something. You do what you're told. You do what you're told, what humans say. You do self-preservation, but not to the point that it violates the first law or something like that, right?
But don't harm any human.
Yeah, so the bottom line was human life, don't harm kind of human through action or inaction. You don't let one come to harm. You protect yourself unless it violates that law and all that kind of stuff. Well, then they reinterpreted it, just they're like Congress. They reinterpreted it to mean that, well, if we're going to protect humanity, we have to protect them from the biggest threat, themselves. So we're going to lock them in a cage and we're going to take care of them. And I go, yep, see, that's what happens. It's like getting a wish from a leprechaun.
Yeah, exactly. No, I just find it disturbing that you referenced the movie rather than the books. Did you ever read the book?
Yeah, I did. It wasn't anything like the movie. That was a good example.
I think I read it, but I was like 12. I mean, it's been so long.
Yeah, the setting wasn't even close. But it's a concept, you know. But I thought they
anyway. Exactly. It's kind of the old sci-fi trope. You know, you set the computer with a certain task, and it interprets it in a completely different way. That's logical, but isn't actually what you wanted. And what do you do with that? And hopefully there will be a Kirk there to say, fulfill your prime directive, and then the computer explodes.
It's like, I remember the first, you say this, the first thing that we knew about. This is what James was saying. He's going, look, you don't know what they've been doing. So they got the Google out there, or Watson going in and looking at cat pictures, and they're seeing everything through a cat picture lens. So you got cameras that look like cats. It's interesting to see this evolve and develop, and now they're starting to do art. And there was one thing we were listening. Donna was listening to some relaxation stuff in the background, and a lot of the stuff she had just robotic, and you could just tell it's just made Well, this one they did the same thing, but they added a piano that sounded like a guy kind of interpreting it and playing. All of a sudden it was interesting. I'm going, okay, we got levels of stuff, kind of a little symphony thing. He's got it going on. There's a guy doing a piano. I go, but do you know it's a piano guy? Mr. Piano Man could be, iRobot. And I'm going, when artificial intelligence, and this is the deal they're talking about, the Ford chord song. You got these different chords that are all these hit songs written by two guys in Europe. You think I'm kidding? Hit songs written by two guys in Europe. You do a search on that, it'll blow up all over the place. They change the lyrics, same beats, boom, 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 boom. You're all into it. Why? Because of the math of it, the harmony of it, and kind of in the brain. And what happens when an AI is able to write hit songs? And 9 of the top 10 are by alien drummer Fred.
This is going to be the big reveal 30 years from now. We're going to find out that all of the hit songs of the past 20 years were written by robots, which will make sense.
Exactly. Which is not going to shock anybody. So,
but of course, the response that I want to give, and that everyone wants to give, is to say, yeah, that's the dumbing down into the simple math formula of, okay, you can use these four chords, the 1, 4, 5, 6, or whatever it is, and you can do that in a million different variations and create a million different hit songs, and everyone will love it because everyone loves these songs. But everyone understands that the music in the 60s and 70s was way more advanced, and there was just, you can literally see that from the chord movements and everything. It was more advanced. They were experimenting much further and going and pushing new boundaries, and now pop music is the most basic, boring nonsense that's ever been conceived by humanity. And everyone understands that to some extent, unless you're 13 years old and growing up on it. But right? Am I just an old man here? But so that's it. That's unique, because it was a human process before, and before it became industrialized and sanitized and manufactured. And here's the rule to get a great hit song, so we'll just do that over and over and over.
It was like in Bohemian Rhapsody, the movie about Queen, and Mike Myers plays the producer, and he goes, formulas, I like formulas, I need formulas, give me a formula. Well, the whole point about Queen was it was a lot more diverse. It had a variety. There was all kinds of crazy stuff. And I listen to songs now and classics, and I'm trying to see, okay, like I play a lot, on the show. I'd use different rejoiners, Led Zeppelin and Pink Floyd and all that kind of stuff. And I'm going, what's the commonality between all of them? I like them, and they're different. If there's somebody come in and show me how they're all the same, I'd probably, be disappointed. But, a lot of this stuff is just the variety, and there's not anyone like Boston. There's nobody like Steely Dan. There's nobody like Steve Miller. But now you got, Taylor Swift at all. They're all the same. And I'm going, but all the older guys always say that about the new music?
It's true. And the older guys were saying that when the Beatles were coming up, you know, what's this off-key caterwauling and give me Frank Sinatra and the good old crooners. So, yeah, I get that there is. But there is a, I mean, there's a mathematically, you can see that the number of chord changes and things in songs, in popular hit songs, number, just look at number one songs from the 60s and 70s. And there were more chord changes and more going on in the songs. It's, you can see that objectively. And I bring this back as a Beatles fan. I bring it back to the
idea. And you play guitar now. You've been, how you doing?
Sorry?
You've been starting to learn guitar and stuff. I was watching you play. You think I don't watch? I was watching you play guitar. How you doing?
Oh, I'm just great. But we go from 1963, 64, where they're doing.
There you go.
Stuff, which is, it's well-written pop stuff, but it's pop stuff. And then literally 2 years later, they're doing stuff like Tomorrow Never Knows, which is still 50 years ahead of anything we could conceptualize today. In the span of 2 years, that kind of tectonic shift going on in popular music is, I'm trying to bring it to anything that's happened in my lifetime, and I can't even conceive of that kind of development.
You know, it's going to have, this is the kind of stuff that, you know, demonstrates we are human. I mean, it breaks out. There's total different shifts, calving off of glaciers, kind of tidal tsunami, something changes. And I've been waiting for the next, we got a lot of demonstration of how it could happen, the spontaneous order of the Ron Paul Lovevolution and so on. And I go, so that gave me, you know, a demonstration of, I mean, I had faith in it and we promoted it and all that kind of stuff. But I tell you, it's just the beginning. There's something coming. There's a great, this is kind of Renaissance Enlightenment stuff. And I don't know, but I know one thing. It's going to include James Corbett videos and audio. I guarantee freaking tee that, you know. That's why we're working on that, because I will not lose this information. It's like the burning of Alexandria, which is why sites like Library get their name. You know, it's like Library, or sometimes they even call Alexandria these different things and so on.
Let me tie it back to Surveillance Valley, because one of the two main funding grants for what became Google when they were still at Stanford, Brin and Page, was from the Digital Libraries Project, which was co-funded by DARPA. So in the white paper for what basically was the backbone of Google, they actually specifically thanked DARPA for the funding. But that's the one that people know about. There's another patent that I'll get into in my podcast. That was a secret patent that was being developed by the Department of Defense and the Alphabet Supers. Basically, Google is exactly what they wanted. It's cataloging, storing, analyzing, data mining information in real time from bajillions of users. This is what we want. Let's see who we can sponsor to make it happen. Oh, these guys over at Stanford have it. All right. Right.
You know, we know what you want, individuals. We know what you want. You know how we know what you want? Because you bought it. You know how we know what you want? Because you were looking for it. You know how we know how you wanted it? The question you asked. You know what? You know what you were interested in? You know all that, you know, sheep porn, you know, goat, whatever, sacrificing of the dimensional, whatever the hell. I mean, you know, this, we, you know.
The worst part is they are going to know you, if they don't already, they are going to know you better than you know yourself. They're going to be able to suggest things that you're like, oh, I didn't even, you know.
But that's not even yourself. This is one thing Naomi Wolf, you know, made a big point of. When you're under, and it's what we have in Pirates Without Borders on, you know, the third letter, Captain Mark, you know, addresses this very point. I give you, you know, the second paragraph here explains it. Under this third-party observation, we are insidiously conditioned to be dishonest with ourselves and our companions. Therefore, a society under constant surveillance survives only under constant deception. But monitoring communication is only a means. The Crown's primary objective is the stifling of free thought itself. Its conquest is complete when its subjects are incapable of dissenting opinion. That's why seasoned pirates have always taken steps to deprive our adversary of any such reconnaissance. I need pirate communication. Why? Because if I know I'm under constant surveillance, I'm censoring myself all the time. I am not really myself. I'm not developing who I want to be or who I associate with or your Chinese credit score or some crap like that. And the Crown's primary objective is, you know, the stifling of free thought itself. So you can't even imagine something different. This
all right, two
is
points
insidious.
To make. One is that that's actually going to be very much in line with the podcast that I'm hoping to release tomorrow, my time Friday. So keep that in mind. But secondarily, yes, let's underline that point because I go back to it time and time and time again. I'll go back to it again. The opening lines of Propaganda by Edward Bernays, the conscious and intelligent manipulation of the organized habits and opinions of the masses is an important element in democratic society. Those who manipulate this unseen mechanism of society constitute an invisible government, which is the true ruling power of our country. I couldn't put it more succinctly myself. That is exactly it. And I always go back to this. It's the conscious and intelligent manipulation of the organized habits and opinions of the masses. You organize their opinions, their thoughts, the way they react to things, and you organize their habits, how they go about their daily routines, what they do,
and
how they behave.
Monetize it.
That is it. That is the power. And so everything else is just how do you get that power? How do you get them to organize their opinions and their habits and structure them in the way you want? And yeah, Google is just a tool for getting into that and to help shaping and sculpting people in a certain direction.
I am more worried about this than probably anything else. That's why we are so focused on this, you know, public opinion thing. And I'm going, it's general public opinion. About what? About all the stuff James Corbett does. That's what, you know. And there's another one on TruthStream Media. They got a thing and beginning of July 2nd, I think, or something in Austin, a 4-hour one of their movies. And
yeah.
And they're getting,
which I believe was just taken down off Amazon. It was on Amazon Prime, I think, but not anymore.
Of course not. Hell no. Hell no. So this is, I feel the battle coming. I think the bad guys are so dependent on their platforms, on us manning them and supporting them and adding data to them and keeping it updated and you know, adding more who's in your pirate network and all this kind of stuff, to where there's got to be, you know, there's going to be someplace else, and it's going to be some savior. It's going to be a, you know, Mark Zuckerberg of rich, I got money, and over here, woohoo, is that going to be the guy?
This is what I was getting at before. Like, when you get to the deep fake level and everything's fake and no one trusts anything and it's every man for himself, how do you bring in that? Because obviously they always want to bring order from chaos. Here's the problem. Here's the reaction. Here's the solution. And they always want to get you to that solution. What even is the solution at that stage? What savior will come to unite everything? Unless they go full Project Bluebeam and, you know, it's Jesus or Muhammad or
no,
whatever.
No, I don't see it like that. They're going to offer a solution to the surveillance. They're going to come over here. Here's the free internet. Here's two chickens in every pot. Here's the privacy Facebook killer. Here it is. Here, right here. Just tying it up right here.
Well, I think they're going to break up Facebook and whatever. They're going to do some sacrificial thing, but it's not going to accomplish anything fundamentally.
Well, what do you think is they'll offer? You know, it's going to be, they're always offering. Whenever you have coups and so on, this is what happens. You know, yeah, you're right. That guy really sucks. That guy's bad, and I'm here to take over, and I'll give you more tyranny, and we'll arrest more of your kids, and we'll send more wars. No, of course they don't say that. You know, they go, oh man, we got to protect the land, against the tyrants of them, or freedom. Freedom, freedom, freedom. As soon as they get their position challenged, now they got an external threat and we got to go kick ass and raise an army or something. I mean, it's the same stuff over and over and over. I'm of the opinion that as time goes on, we become much more educated than we recognize this stuff coming from things like James Corbett's reports. This is, they take away 9/11, they take away Century of Enslavement, they take away why and how, big oil, they take away 9/11, they take away. That's going to suck. I need this stuff. You know, this is, I use this constantly. Century of the Self in the BBC, The Power of Nightmares, a bunch of, you know, TED Talks, of this, of that, of so on. Something, you know, well, TED's kind of gone off the rails, but, you know, there's, yeah, it's like
TEDx,
Wired, TED, Popular Science, Popular Mechanics, they suck. All of them just suck. I sit here and watch them degrade. Have you noticed that on the internet, a lot of the, you know, supply of good information, just they suck? Why do they suck so much, Jerry?
That is a general trend. And let's add another layer of dystopian nihilism to all of this. I heard you talking the other day with Dr. Frank and Bob. I heard you talking about the echo chamber of one, which is coming. Because as you know, they're auto-generating articles these days with AI and whatever. And it's going to get to the point where, individually tailored articles for you, because as we say, Google knows you better than you know yourself. They're going to write the perfect articles for you that will keep you perfectly engaged and ensnared. And they can shape that and alter it any way they want to make you into whatever type of person they want you to be. And again, this isn't crazy conspiracy theorist James Corbett. The Google Selfish Ledger video I don't know if you ever saw that. The creepiest thing imaginable, where they're talking about how they're going to, the ultimate end game is to literally engineer people into whatever they want. Your ledger that they're going to write on, essentially.
Did you ever see Epic 2014? You know, this...
No, I heard you playing a bit of it. I think it might actually ring a bell. Maybe I did see that back in the day. But
I'm sure you did. This was... if you were freaking conspiracy kind of looking truth word, what did you came across this thing? You had to. It was tech geeks in Georgia Tech, Alabama, something. And it was part of a presentation that they did, I think. And it was looking at the internet from 2014. And they're going, it was called Epic 2014. And you look back and they go, well, this happened and Google did this. And, you know, Amazon did that. And they call it Google's on. And then they did on went on into whatever. And the point that they were making is they're getting to the point that artificial intelligence is going to be able to go out based on your search, your buying habits. You get Amazon and Google and their engines of data of whatever the hell, and Facebook, you put all that in there, and they can write articles that they know will be pleasing to you and get all SJ Warrior right wing triggered up of a customized article that you're willing to pay for. And they're going, and then, well, of course, the solution, they'll twist it a little bit, and therefore you need to do this. Now, we have, as a regular writer, started on Freedom's Phoenix, left-leaning guy named Stephen Lenman. Now, Stephen, you know, sincere, does a lot of research, but his conclusion is, therefore, we need another Department of Government, you know? So, I mean, he doesn't lie to you. But he has a different opinion. So we put him up there. He's sincere in it. I don't care. You know, say your thing. We'll compete in the market of ideas. But this is a customized newsletter for you. And whether, I don't know, what do you think will happen with that? How will that manifest itself in public opinion?
Yeah, well, the worst part of it, I mean, if they were just tailoring it for you based on what you like, then in a sense, that's good. But the point is, as you say, it's always going to be what direction are they trying to shape it? And therefore this, and if that is inserted, eventually that will lead you in one direction or another. Or the other part of this, of course, is they will perfectly tailor these articles about these things and you'll be totally engrossed in them because they're right up your alley, but they'll kind of leave out the other stuff. And you'll never notice the other stuff because you're too entranced in what they want you to look at. So that's the other.
What do they want you to look at, James? All this surveillance thing. We haven't even done that. You know, why is so they can rule you. I mean, I guess. But the, you know, what do they want you to look at? Look at this. Is it fear? Is it sex? You know, if it was sex, I'd be cool. I mean, whatever. You know, it's voluntary kind of, you know, it's not violent or type that. But no, you must, you know, it's like in the movies, the MPAA. It's, you know, Friday the 13th, you know, part 47, and they can spear the two, you know, Jason. I remember a high school thing. They're in the bunk bed and they're making out at camp, and Jason comes in. He spears the couple through the bed and pins them to the floor. Well, that's okay as long as you have violence is the result of unconsecrated marital sex. Well, then it's okay. There's some programming. And I always knew this, and come to find out there's a movie called This Movie Is Not Yet Rated. And it is awesome in pointing out that they did this stuff on purpose. And I'm going, to what end?
Well, you know what? I mean, there are things that people can voluntarily and consensually engage in, whatever. I'm not going to go and say we need a state to stop it. But there is a point at which distraction becomes to the point where, you can go and plug yourself into the matrix and, you know, check out. It's your prerogative to do so. But if we are being engineered into wanting and desiring to plug into the matrix and never have to deal with reality, that kind of works out pretty well for the would-be rulers of society, isn't it? Less competition for them. You know, look at all these people in their pods. enjoying their matrix reality, whereas we're really ruling. And whatever form that matrix reality takes, hey, maybe you voluntarily and consensually plugged yourself in, but I'm not happy about that outcome, and I'm trying to shake people out of it. No, I think there's something to do in the real world. So anything that is distracting us from the real power structures of society, how power operates, and more importantly than all of that, really, what we can do, we ourselves, what we can do to build the world we want, that's the real thing that they fear.
So then they just got to get you to want what they want.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, as long as you are
a spectator in life, they win. That's it. All they want you to do is just enjoy the ride. You know, it's just whatever. It's a game. Just,
you know, I give
back.
You this. This. You probably agree with this line of thought. I'm going, you know, the big box stores like the Walmarts and so on, they operate on a very small margin. You know, it's getting competition with there's not a whole lot of gravy there, especially with all the packs of whatever. So it's just public opinion. When you're decided, I'm not going to go there anymore. I'm not going to buy that. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to get this product because it's got the word freedom or liberty on the label. Or so. I mean, because it says organic. So you start doing that. What happens? All of a sudden, the biggest load of, you know, bottom of the barrel crap at Walmart turns into organic, fluffy green, whatever the hell, based on what you want. So want the right thing. So what do? They want you to want the bad things. You need a nice dose of Hillary Clinton. We have here for you, Donald Trump. You see my point? So it's the thing gets you to want what they want you to want. Well, then they're done.
That's it. And are your thoughts your own? And how are those thoughts shaped? They're shaped through language. And that's going to be my teaser for the podcast that I'm working on for this week that will be out hopefully tomorrow. And on that note, I got to get running to my next interview.
Thank you very much. You said, you know, teaser of what? Is there a title here? Is there what? What would you almost tell us?
Language is a weapon.
Language is weapon. Is a weapon?
It's a weapon.
It's a weapon. Language is a weapon. James Corbett, thecorbettreport.com. Great talk to you, James. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
Bye.